Good morning, Chalveston, Caldecott and Chelston Rise. It's Sunday the 24th of May, and this is Adrian Dale with the Daily Podcast. Indeed, this is the 64th podcast that I've recorded since the emergency started. But I was sincerely hoping that they wouldn't be needed by now, and that I wouldn't have to feed the communications machine every day. Each one of the briefings takes at least 3 hours to record, write and edit. So let's just say it keeps me busy. But there's still evidence that people listen and value them. On Friday, we had those technical gremlins and lots of people commented that they were unable to get the podcast on time. And at 6:03 yesterday morning, Pete the Wurzel Rawlins sent me a tongue-in-cheek message wondering why I hadn't published yet. Was I slacking at the weekend? Actually, Pete, it was already live by then, but I don't publish the link to WhatsApp until the newsletter is complete. And that was just 3 minutes later. Normally my aim is to do it by 06:30 in the mornings, which was just on time for Fiona Cole, who came back in at 6:38 with, "Well done, Adrian, may these podcasts remain," which of course is most welcome, but clearly means I have to keep going. Then Vanessa chipped in with support for the idea that clear, honest and direct communications are essential in all parts of village life, not just this emergency. But it was Michelle that lit the blue touch paper, but by suggesting that I should run for Prime Minister. And a whole flurry of chat followed, in which the idea of a job swap with Boris was proposed. No thank you, folks. I'm just a grass cutter. But Alan was concerned that my podcasts are a bit too political, and that with hindsight it's easy to criticise. Now, this is a very fair point, but I would like to respond. You see, I've got no political allegiance at all. I cannot stand partisan politics. I think it gets in the way of good governance. In my time in this parish, I voted for a candidate from all three of the major political parties in the parliamentary elections over the years. You see, I want an MP to represent me when local matters need to be raised to a higher level. So at each election, I contact the candidates to find out how they think and how they work and what their local knowledge is. And I choose the candidate that is able to engage well and survive my cross-examination. But at the last election, two of the unsuccessful candidates didn't even respond to my request for a dialogue, and one didn't even give me contact details. I had to hunt them down, much to their surprise. Now, I wouldn't necessarily be a drinking buddy of our present MP, Peter Bone, but I respect the fact that he doesn't toe the party line at all, and he does make every attempt to bring the needs of our constituency to the attention of the government. And if I contact him, he responds immediately. He's been highly critical of the government previously, but he has been noticeably quiet during this crisis. Now, my criticism of the present government approach is based upon observation and facts, not politics. We've got the second highest death rate in the world, and so far this pandemic has cost over £2,000 for every man, woman and child in the country. All borrowed. That's not a success story. Our strategy for dealing with a pandemic has never properly been articulated, and our tactics seem to change daily, depending on the pressures faced by ministers during their media interrogations. One minute there was a blanket quarantine exemption for people from France. Next there wasn't. On Friday there were strict quarantine rules, spot checks and fines that were announced. But yesterday it was suggested that the government is negotiating special exemptions for prominent sports stars or teams to allow the summer sporting events to go ahead. It's all a muddle. And the question of my 2020 hindsight is actually very important. But actually, my criticisms are not new. I've just kept quieter until now. There were two things that chilled me to the bone in the early days of this crisis. The first was the decision to allow the Cheltenham Race Festival to go ahead on the 10th of March. This decision was taken even though the Irish government had already cancelled all St Patrick's Day celebrations on scientific advice. I saw the Cheltenham crowds and I wondered if we'd lost our collective marbles. The Irish ambassador was watching on and he had tears in his eyes because he knew that the racegoers would often be Irish and that they would take the virus home with them. He was right. 250,000 people attended the festival and it was the biggest super spreader event of the pandemic. Racegoers took the virus back to every corner of the UK and it was at that point we lost control. My second concern was to watch the hand-washing campaign unfold at the beginning of March and then keep going without change. Lynn and I couldn't understand it. COVID-19 is a coronavirus. The common cold can be caused by coronaviruses. And no amount of hand washing will protect you if you're in the room with someone who's got a cold, or perhaps on a train or an airplane. How many of you have come back from a hot summer holiday with a cold, caught on the plane from someone snuffling several rows away? Coronaviruses are mainly passed person to person in the air, not on surfaces. In fact, yesterday, the Center for Disease Control in America published a report saying that the risks of catching COVID-19 from surfaces had been vastly overstated. But surely other countries made the same mistakes. Well, yes, they did. The USA, Italy, Spain, and France. But look at Vietnam, China, South Korea, and Singapore. Why did they get it right? Surely they had scientific advisors too. Oh, the answer's surprisingly simple. All of these countries had suffered three previous coronavirus epidemics: SARS-1, SARS-2, and MERS, all respiratory syndromes. This time, when they got a sniff of the cause, the coronavirus, they made the wearing of masks mandatory. They tracked and traced and quarantined every victim, and they locked down cities when the first trace of infection was found. They had a well-rehearsed epidemic plan. But surely the UK had an epidemic plan. Oh, yes, indeed. And it's dated 2014, and it was rehearsed in an exercise in 2016. It's called the Pandemic Influenza Response Plan. This is the plan the government used in the early stages of the epidemic. But did you notice the basic flaw here? It was a pandemic plan for influenza and not for a coronavirus. Unfortunately, they're completely different diseases and they behave differently. So we did precisely the wrong things at the crucial point. And I'm not saying this with hindsight. It was obvious to me from the get-go. Don't ask me why or how, but the people advising our gold commander, Boris, put a plan into action which was completely inappropriate, and now we're paying the price. So what are we doing in this village to deal with this? Well, we're beginning the long-term planning for reopening of our facilities, the village hall, the church, and the pub. But believe me, we'll be doing this very carefully. We'll research all best practice, all precautions, and we'll publish the plan for each venue before anything happens. I want everyone to look at the plans and use our collective insight to decide if we are happy as a community. As I said, I'm not in the least bit interested in national politics. I only care about this village and what will keep this village safe. Thank you.